This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I am Freddie Bell. It's a joy to be with you each week. And joining us on the show this week is Dr. Michael Osterholm. He's an epidemiologist. He's advised President Biden and people are all around the country, if not the world, about the Omicron variant and what we can do to protect ourselves. This week, he's talking to us about this new strain of the COVID-19 virus and how infectious it is to people who come in contact with it. Plus, we have finance information from Mr. Leibel Sternbach. He is on fire. Kathy McClear from AARP Minnesota stops by, and we continue a lesson from Unity South Twin Cities. This is New Beginnings, and our show starts right now. Joining us right now is the State Director for AARP Minnesota, Kathy McClear, who's been in the chair. Has it been a year yet, Kathy? I don't think so.
No, just shy of a year, so not quite.
Not quite. Well, we're glad that you're with us, and a lot of things have happened under your watch. And before we really get started, if our listeners would like to get more information from you about AARP's work and its advocacy, how can they reach out to you?
Sure. They can find us at aarp.org/MN.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about our members and our listeners' money, Social Security to be specific. A new law went into effect just a few weeks ago, July 3rd, I believe it was, taking away the requirements restricting Social Security recipients from getting their full jobless benefits. What does that mean for your members and for people across the state?
Right. So, you know, we found during the pandemic when people were working part-time, often seniors who maybe were receiving Social Security were working part-time to help supplement their income in retirement. If they were laid off, they were not eligible to receive their full unemployment insurance benefits. So at that time, Minnesota was the only state in the nation that continued to reduce those Social Security, reduce your unemployment insurance benefits by about 50%.
Wow.
For someone who had either received or applied or was planning on applying for Social Security benefits. And so, as you know, during the pandemic, when folks got laid off, that was a huge hit, especially to someone who was living on a fixed income and receiving Social Security benefits.
So what did AARP do, and how did you lobby to get this change, if any change was enacted?
Yeah. So again, we were the only state in the nation who still had this, what they call it as an unemployment insurance offset. And our members and our advocates, went to the legislature, and we fought very, very hard to repeal that offset because we really felt that it unfairly penalized older workers who were laid off during the pandemic. And so, we wanted that to be retroactive so that those folks could be made whole and recoup some of that money that they lost during the pandemic. We weren't successful in that, but we are fortunate that July 3rd, so just last week, that final agreement of that repeal went into effect. And so going forward, folks who do receive Social Security benefits and happen to get laid off of their job will now receive full jobless benefits.
Well, how many people does this affect in the state of Minnesota, would you estimate?
Well, so we think about 16% of Minnesotans who are 62 and older who are receiving Social Security are still working. And so we think that that's well over 135,000, 137,000 folks in the state of Minnesota. And while those benefits are modest, really that could result in about $1,600 a month for someone who is on Social Security receiving those benefits and might be laid off. So that's pretty substantial, $1,600 a month.
What do the citizens need to do if they're looking for this offset? Are there specific steps that need to be taken?
You can reach out to your Social Security, the Social Security Administrative Office. That's a great place to start. You could also contact the Senior Linkage Line, which provides great information for folks. Or if they just want to read more information about this particular measure and the law that was repealed, they can read more at aarp.org/MN.
Finally, you had a lot of people who were coming to your stead and working in behalf, making sure that this took place for your members and folks across the state.
Yeah, so we're just so grateful for our volunteers who really, you know, came out in full force speaking out against this particular law and asking for that repeal. We certainly also want to acknowledge the authors. So we had Senator Rarick of Pine City, Representative Dabney of Minneapolis, and some of the lead negotiators, Representative Knorr and Senator Pratt of Prior Lake. So we just appreciate how everyone pulled together to make this happen for Minnesota seniors.
Well, bravo for AARP Minnesota.
Thank you.
All right. She's Kathy McClear, the state director for AARP MN, and you're listening to New Beginnings.
Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment. Every day is a chance for a fresh start.
Thanks so much for listening to New Beginnings, and joining us right now is Dr. Michael Osterholm, a frequent guest on our show. Doctor, thanks so much for being with us. With the BA5 variant, we are understanding is the most transmissible of the Omicron variant so far. Where are we today?
I think we'd be better off with a mindset that we found ourselves in a different position with this pandemic. We have vaccines, antivirals, and a better understanding of how to treat patients and improve outcomes. What are we doing as far as expanding access to these resources? What's the plan for those suffering from the effects of long COVID? How long will vaccines really hold up? What happens if we start to see deaths go back up? In fact, right now, there are signs of global deaths starting to inch up again from the BA5 wave. And with rising hospitalizations and ICU admissions in a number of countries, including the U.S., the U.K., Germany, and France, I think the death toll is going to increase over the weeks ahead. What impact will waning immunity or even new variants and subvariants have on severe disease and death in 6 months' time? What about a year or even 5 years ago? Again, I don't think enough of us are having these discussions or putting together these short, medium, and long-term goals. And without those, I think we'll continue to be in a position where we're two, three, or even four steps behind the virus. So with BA5 serving as our latest reminder that COVID's not done with us, I hope we can make some inroads in a new way of thinking about this pandemic. The coming weeks will be very telling. With the rise of BA5, which is better at evading immune protection than previous variants, we could be in for a flurry of cases. We could have the perfect storm here with the transmission levels high, large numbers of people traveling, shifting attitudes about the pandemic, and a new dominant strain that has been shown to increase hospitalization levels in several countries across the globe. We'll need to keep our eye on things in the U.S. for the coming weeks. Remember, this pandemic is not done with us. I know no one wants to hear that, but it's such an important message. As an epidemiologist, the most important four-letter word that I know from a professional standpoint, data, data, data. That's how we make our living, trying to understand the reality of the current moment through data. So, yes, absolutely. I'm very concerned, because I see an ever-eroding basis of data for which we can make the kinds of decisions we need to about what's happening. So I share these concerns, and at best, I know we have an incomplete picture of what is happening with this virus. We know that throughout the pandemic, the number of recorded COVID cases has been an undercount of the true number of cases. Not all people with COVID infection were tested, meaning that the number of cases reported has always been an underestimate. There are three other factors that make understanding what is happening with the virus a real challenge. First, it's reduction in public testing. Beginning in the spring of this year, many of the mass testing sites across the country closed or scaled back their level of operation, leaving public testing capacity at about half of what it was earlier this year. Second is an increase in the number of at-home rapid tests. While these tests are a game changer for identifying infection quickly and at a large scale, there is no systematic way that these cases are being reported, and most go uncounted in official numbers. And of course, we also have to note that even with the at-home tests, we know there are many examples where there are false negative test results, meaning that it's clear that the individual has COVID. They're in a family setting where some have already tested positive by PCR. They all have the same illness, yet they test negative in lateral flow. So even if those cases were reported for lateral flow testing, these would never have been reported because they would still be considered as negative. And third, most states are only now giving official case updates weekly as compared to previously when states were reporting daily case counts. This means that the initial signals of upticks in case numbers may be delayed. We may have some days, if a number of states all decide to report cases on Friday or on Wednesday or Monday, where we can see big peaks in cases, and then just for the next 2 days, really major valleys in case reporting. So it's much harder to understand what's going on in terms of that kind of situation. I would have to say right now that none of the official numbers we have are all giving us an adequate look at what's currently happening with virus transmission in our community. They may tell us what happened 2 or 3 weeks ago, but not now. And that's a challenge. So I look at this as, how many people do I know with clinical illness that either is test positive or there's every reason to believe that they have COVID, is probably the best indicator. And, you know, I know that this feels like a meteorologist walking outside, wetting their finger, putting it up in the air to see which way the wind's coming from, and saying, yeah, we got strong breezes from the southwest. I feel like that's where we're at from an epidemiologic perspective. The kind of case numbers I'm seeing among friends, colleagues, and family surely support that we're seeing lots of transmission right now. I think that's really, really, really an important point. So while this is not completely flying blind, imagine that the cockpit has no radar. The windows to the cockpit are completely fogged over, and we're trying to take off or land somewhere. That's kind of how I feel about where we're at with our numbers. Don't forget that right now we have thrown out over 90 million doses of vaccine in this country because of it expiring or unable to use because of how it was handled. There are tens of millions of discarded vaccine doses occurring every month now worldwide. So this is not a shortage of vaccine as such. It surely may be a challenge to get vaccine to the right location, but more often than not, this is about getting that needle in the arm, that last inch. So let's just be clear that there are several issues that are really operative with this discussion. Now, I want to be really also very clear that I don't think right now this country, or for that matter, anyone in the world, has a strategy for where we're going with these vaccines. Don't forget, when the first results of the vaccine trials were announced in 2020, there was a certain sense of euphoria. Ha-ha, we have found the answer. Two doses of vaccine, and it seemed as if somehow you might be protected for life. Remember all of that when we told people that was all they needed to do? And the challenge is that unlike a measles vaccine model approach, where two doses may cover you for a lifetime in protection, this is much more like an influenza vaccine model, where you may be lucky if you get protection of any magnitude, at least against infection, within months of the last vaccine you got. And so what we're in right now is a situation of where the vaccines we have are not doing the job we want them to do. They are surely still powerful. They are still reducing serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths. But waning immunity and immune evasion are really important right now. So what we need are new game-changing vaccines, vaccines that can, in fact, provide durable immunity. Are they possible? I don't know. I hope so. I, as you know, as part of a SIDRAP team here, are leading an international effort to define a roadmap process for coming up with these better coronavirus vaccines. But none of those are going to come anytime soon. It's going to take months to years before we might realize better vaccines. In the meantime, we have to figure out how we're going to use the vaccines we have. How might this all work in terms of even timing? I'm certain that if we go into the mode of chasing variants to find the one that should be in the vaccine so that it can protect people, by the time that that could even happen, that variant will actually come and go. And we have to understand that it's not just a simple matter of protection with a variant vaccine. It's of note that right now we have many, many people who are infected with BA1, the very first emerging variant of Omicron, back in January and February, that are now cases again with BA5. So that really highlights the fact that just because you have a variant-specific vaccine, it doesn't mean that even within that variant, you may be protected with that vaccine. If natural infection doesn't do it, protecting you against BA5 by having had BA1, how can we be certain that vaccines themselves will do it? We have to be able to communicate much more effectively what these vaccines can do, how they can do it. Will they, in fact, reduce serious illness and hospitalizations, but not necessarily impact on the overall issue of clinical infection? We don't know. And I don't see this discussion going on in any meaningful way right now about what to do. I think the VRBPAC meeting was all about one specific issue. Do we make this a bivalent vaccine with an Omicron-specific subvariant antigen included, or do we not? But there really wasn't any discussion at all about what is the future of these vaccines? How do we use them? They're not the final end product tool we need. But in the meantime, between now and then, how are we going to handle this? And I got to honestly say, I don't know.
And with that, we say thank you to Dr. Michael Osterholm. I'm Freddie Bell, and you're listening to New Beginnings. We're fortunate to share a lot of great information with you this week on New Beginnings. And right now it's time for a little fun. You know, men might throw their weight around at the office, but at home, women are the bosses. A study found that wives have more power than their husbands in making decisions and dominating discussions. In the study at Iowa State University, trained volunteers watched video of more than 70 couples and used a scale that rated couples and their interactions based on words and behaviors associated with blame, demands, withdrawal, and avoidance and discussion. Wives were more demanding, asking for changes in their relationship or in their partner, and were more likely to get their way than their husbands. This held regardless of who had chosen the issue. So is this bad for the marriage? Not necessarily. Researchers say wife power could signal a harmonious couple. And it's wacky, but it's true. A 77-year-old woman in the UK was trying to withdraw money from her savings account, but was refused because she was dead. The woman's account had been closed and the $6,000 in it paid out. Despite flashing photo ID, the woman was informed that she was still officially deceased and could not withdraw any cash. Eventually, after the bank investigated further, it discovered that a woman with a name similar to hers and around the same age had died. It took 9 weeks, but she finally got her money back. And finally, the plan to steal three paintings from a home in Sweden seemed flawless. Two thieves forced their way in, grabbed the paintings, and headed for their getaway car. But that's when the thieves' lack of planning was exposed. A witness say they tried to get the painting in the car, but it was too big, so they threw it aside. Just for fun this week, I'm Freddie Bell, and our show continues right now.
Minneapolis Public Housing is right now on New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi again, everyone, and welcome back to New Beginnings. And now we turn our attention to the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center and the property manager, Kitty Harris. Hi, Kitty.
Good morning, Freddie. How are you?
I'm really excited to be talking with you. It's always interesting because of the fine work that you do at the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center. Before we get into the topic today, tell us what the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center is all about.
So the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center was basically created to be a hub of healthy activity for seniors in North Minneapolis and the surrounding suburbs. And we are proud that for the past 10 years, we have been able to complete that mission.
All right. And to that mission, you've got a big event happening involving the Lau Center.
Yes, one of our newest partners. And when I say new, that's relative because they've been here out a couple of years now. But one of our newest partners, the Lau Center, who's been in North Minneapolis for over 20 years, has been providing monthly breast cancer clinics and food distribution clinics for the community since that we have been reopened and engaging the community since COVID-19 pandemic. So we're very excited to continue these programs. And so on July 21st, we will be having another monthly breast cancer event, as well as on July 29th, we will be having another monthly food distribution clinic.
All right. So what's involved with it? How can our listeners become a part of this?
So if someone wants to participate in the breast cancer clinic, we just ask that they call and register. And they can give us a call at 612-374-4967 to get more information about signing up for the breast cancer clinic. That's in the mammogram mobile comes out every month, and that's in partnership with Fairview Clinic. And then also if someone wants to get, if they're having some food needs and they want to participate in the food distribution, they would also give us a call as well to register. And again, that phone number is 612-374-4967.
Is the food that is being distributed, is that only for a certain set of people, or who would qualify?
Anybody in the community that has a need qualifies. They just need to call and register. And one of the things that we have said to people is that when they come to the food distribution, if there are some items that might be a culturally specific need, they can certainly let us know and we can look to try to get funding to secure those items as well, because our donations vary every month, but it's open to anyone in the community that is experiencing a food insecurity.
All right. We're talking with Kitty Harris, property manager for the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center. There are a lot of things. Are you back to full speed now with events and so forth at the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center?
We are back to, well, we never stopped providing our services as far as North Point Health and Wellness and Odom Health and Wellness and our Open Circle Adult Day program. So those are up and running, fully operational, ready to serve the community. We are still slow to go on things like bingo and maybe some of our community dance and gatherings and different things like that. But we will always make sure that we're having our breast cancer events, our blood drives, our health fairs, things that are imperative for our community to have. We are going to be trying to do some book giveaways in the fall for students. So I encourage people to follow us on Facebook. Go to Facebook and look at Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center so they can keep abreast of our upcoming programs and events.
Okay, and you mentioned registration. What is the telephone number or website for our listeners to register for the upcoming events?
So for the upcoming events sponsored by LOW, they can call us again at 612-374-4967.
She's Kitty Harris. Thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Freddie. Have a great day.
You too.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference. Available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
Minnesota is home to a robust network of more than 300 food shelves that may be able to offer additional food support to families and individuals who are suffering from hunger. Hunger Solutions can locate a food shelf near you. Call the Minnesota Food Helpline at 1-888-711-1151, 888-711-1151, or use the interactive map at hungersolutions.org. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Let's turn our attention now to lifestyle. I've got Cassie Crandall standing by with three things.
Thank you, Freddie. I'm Cassie Crandall, and these are my three things this week. Well, last weekend, you bet, I did see Thor: Love and Thunder. It was great, as I expected. The next big Marvel movie that we're expecting is coming out November 11th. And that will be Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Excited about that, although a little bit sad because Chadwick Boseman will not be in it as he did pass away. Very sad about that, but we will move on. Marvel continues to make things fun for the moviegoer. My thing number two this week, the Minnesota State Fair is coming up August 25th to September 5th. And I thought I'd let you know about a couple of new foods that are going to be at the fair this year. One comes to us from a place called German Root Beer and Popcorn. It's a cotton candy float, cotton candy soda poured over vanilla ice cream and topped with cotton candy. Okay. Well, if you're a big cotton candy fan, that probably sounds great. I would definitely sample it. The second one I'll tell you about is from a place called Nordic Waffles, and it's called the Bellyful Nordic Waffle. It's onion-infused Nordic waffle filled with seasoned pork belly with coleslaw and locally made jalapeno jam. Maybe. It's great to see the variety of foods that you can get at the State Fair, August 25th to September 5th. So exciting! And finally, my thing number three this week, I'll leave you with a quote. A person who feels appreciated will always do more than what is expected. And boy, is that the truth. Remember to say thanks, please. I really appreciated you doing that for me. Have a great week, everybody. For New Beginnings, I'm Cassie Crandall.
Thanks so much, Cassie. We'll talk to you again next week.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
It's time for It Happened This Week on New Beginnings. Pre-trial hearings in the sentencing of the Parkland, Florida school shooter resumed this week. Nicholas Cruz's defense team has sought to limit the evidence prosecutors will be allowed to show during the death penalty trial. Cruz opened fire at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in 2018 and killed 17 people. Pope Francis is telling young people to eat less meat in order to take better care of the earth. In a letter to participants at a youth conference in Prague, the Pope wrote that it's important to break this self-destructive trend of consumerism and make sustainability a priority. Francis wrote it's urgent to reduce consumption of not only fossil fuels, but also what he calls many superfluous things. And this year's Emmy nominees have been revealed. The 74th Annual Primetime Emmy Awards will be handed out on Monday, September 17th. It happened this week, and I'm Freddie Bell.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Now let's turn our attention to your financial health in retirement. And with us is Leibel Sternbach. He is an Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. So Leibel, let's pick up on that discussion where we started last week. We've been talking about what the market is, how prices go up and down on the stock market. And I'm curious, Leibel, how do you invest in the stock market?
So there is really one... Well, there's never just one way to invest, but the primary way to invest is we buy what's called a stock or a bond. And a stock is a fractional share of a company. And so you own that company, and that imbues you with certain rights. Rights usually to vote on things, you know, decisions that the board makes. It gives you certain, you know, the company has certain responsibilities to you because now you own a piece of it. So generally speaking, it's by owning a stock, right? Owning a share in the company. Another way is that you can loan money to a company, and those are usually called bonds. And so when you have a bond, you're loaning money to the company, and in return for loaning the money to the company, you're going to receive interest for a period of time, and then once that loan period is up, you will receive your principal back. It also, like a loan on your house, like a mortgage, if something were to happen to the company, you would be further ahead in line when it comes to who gets paid back and who receives money when that company liquidates. So you would be ahead of general creditors. So, you know, unsecured debt that the company took on, you would be ahead of them. You would be ahead of people who own stocks in the company. But you'd still be behind most other people. So that's why bonds are considered to be safer, generally speaking, is because, you know, if the company goes belly up, you're going to get something out of it. It's definitely not going to be all your money, but you're not going to be left with nothing like most shareholders.
Interesting. So are there some inherent risk? And I'm sure there probably are, knowing Leibel Sternbach, but talk about the risk and rewards of investing in the stock market.
So the risk with everything, and it really doesn't matter, you know, no matter how secure people say things are, you always have the risk that you can lose everything, right? The second that the money leaves your hands, you now have a risk of loss. The question is, to what degree is that risk of loss? And the greater your risk of loss, the greater your theoretical return will be. And the reason for this is quite simple, right? You probably... You know, when you think of all the people who understand investing and, you know, all the PhDs and whizzes out there, right, who are making, you know, billions of dollars, they're a lot smarter than us. And if they're going to take on a risk, they're going to demand that the return that they get or the possible return that they get is commensurate with the risk that they're taking on, right? They're not going to take on stupid, foolish risks. And so what happens is when we have thousands of people like that who are investing and they're demanding a return on their money and they're demanding a, you know, a reasonable return, that means that the rest of us get to participate in that, right? And so we can sort of safely assume that if we're, the more risk we take on, the more potential reward we're going to get, because the smarter people in the market are going to ensure that that happens. Let me give you an example, right? If I keep my money in the freezer, right? Nobody's paying me for that, right? So I get zero return, but I have zero risk. And really, I have a little bit of risk that the dollar is going to go down in value, right? So low risk, no reward. If I give the money to a bank, right, and I say, here, I'm going to deposit this in your savings account, right? You can loan the money out, but when I want it, I can get it, right? So I have almost zero risk, right? Because what are my risks? My risks are that the bank, there's a run on the bank, and the bank, you know, doesn't have the money to give me my money back. But it's still insured by, you know, the federal government, the FDIC or SBIC, right? One of those insurance companies are going to reimburse me for my money up until, you know, $250,000.
Right.
So it's a very small risk. It's not zero. So if I have more than $250,000 in a savings account, right, I have some risk. But for most people, it's zero risk. So what's your return? Basically zero, right?
Correct.
Now, let's move that up a little bit. Let's say I'm going to give up something. I'm going to say, you know what, to the bank, I'm not going to touch my money for 5 years. You can loan this out now for a longer period of time because you don't have to worry that I'm going to come ask for my money. Right. And so now the bank can say, well, we got this business opportunity here. We got this guy who wants to open up a pizzeria. We have this guy who wants to open up a plumbing business. You know, it'll take them 2 or 3 years until they're profitable. So we're going to loan your money to those people, and maybe we'll loan it to 50 of those people and spread it around. But we know that you're not going to come asking for your money for 5 years. So we're okay doing that. We're going to make more money. And in exchange, we're going to give you more of a return, right? Because in exchange for you telling me, right, you giving up the right to your money for 5 years, you're going to demand something for it. Right. And that demand is going to be the interest that we're paying. And that keeps moving up and up and up. Right. So the more risk that we're taking on, whether it's, you know, investing with our friend to open up a business or investing in Bitcoin, which I think is like, you know, very speculative. Right. And what have we seen? We've seen huge returns. Right. 1,000, 10,000% returns. But it had a risk, right? Everything has come crashing down recently. Companies are going bankrupt. Mm-hmm. You have what were considered the banks of cryptocurrency, right? Having runs on their money or not having enough liquidity, and they're liquidating now. And that's a very high risk, high reward, right? The investors got compensated for the risk they took on of that there can be a run on the bank in the form of getting 20% interest rates. Right. In the form of getting, you know, 10,000% return on Bitcoin for a period of time. It's, you know, the piper came due at some point, but there was this opportunity, that risk reward that they got. And so when we think of investments, there are really three factors that there are three variables that influence our return. There is how much risk we're taking on. Mm-hmm. How much of a time horizon we have to acquire that return, right? So the longer our time horizon is, the longer that we can wait to get a return, the greater of a return we'll get. And when you combine risk and time together, you end up with your return. So if somebody comes and tells you, I'm going to give you a huge return with no risk and no time, you know they're making something up, right? It's not possible.
It's time to run.
If they came to you and said, I'm going to give you something very low risk, but it's going to take a long time to happen, and you're going to get a big return, right? That's possible, right? Because we're giving up a huge amount of time. And so what you want to try to do as an investor is balance those two factors to something of your liking so that you're taking on a risk that you're comfortable with, over a time period that you're comfortable with to get the return that you need.
So is that different for bonds, Libel?
So bonds, well, everything is the same, right? The question is what's the risk and what's the time horizon? Bonds have a built-in time horizon because there is a loan period. You have, you know, what is the length of that bond? It could be a one-year bond. It can be 5 years. It could be 30 years, right? So you automatically know what the time horizon is on the bond. And then the risk becomes when you have to resell that bond, right? Let's say you need cash or you need to reinvest. So let's say 10 years go by and that bond matures and now you have your principal. You now need to reinvest that money, right? You need to now go find another bond to invest in. And that is a risk. So there are different risks when it comes with bonds than with stocks, but the risks are still there the same. They're just different.
I got it. So what about mutual funds? Same question, but as you explained, what's the difference? What is a mutual fund?
So now that we have those basic building blocks, we now have, you know, we can now slice and dice them in different ways. And so the two most common ways is ETFs and mutual funds. And both of them are a basket of these stocks and bonds. So they're multiple stocks and bonds together. The difference between the two is a mutual fund is a company. It is a company set up to manage a specific investment. That means it has a board of directors, it has an investment manager, it has employees, it has expenses, it has marketing costs, accounting costs, right? It's a full company and you own shares in that company. So that company may do what you think they're supposed to do, right? If you imagine you and a bunch of your friends get together and you're like, well, one of our buddies is great at investing. Let's give him our money and tell him to invest it. Well, you're not going to give him a blank check and say, do whatever you want. You're going to say, go invest it according to the mandates that we give you, right? Mm-hmm. We only want a certain amount of risk. We only want you to invest in these type of companies, et cetera. A mutual fund company, in theory, operates that way. The reality is that because there's a certain amount of lack of transparency when it comes to mutual funds, they may end up deviating from what their mandate is. And that's where you suddenly get mutual funds that have like really great returns. When you see a mutual fund that has better returns than its peers doing the same thing, you got to wonder what it is that they're doing that's different. And if they don't have a good explanation, it might actually be that they're not doing what they say they're doing.
So with all of this, Libel, do we need to have a broker or a financial advisor to help us to navigate through all of this?
I don't think you do. There was a time when you really needed a financial advisor or a broker. You needed a broker to be able to access stocks and bonds and mutual funds. There was a time when you really needed to go through someone. That time is long past, right? To access the vast majority of investments, everyone can do it from their smartphone. So you don't need a financial advisor to be able to access it. Where you may find that a financial advisor is helpful is in helping you make smart decisions and helping you not get caught up in the craze that's happening in the markets. You know, when everyone starts getting optimistic or they start getting pessimistic, as Warren Buffett says, right, when people are greedy, become fearful. And when people are fearful, become greedy. And it goes against human nature. So a financial advisor, you know, they can help you combat that, you know, human nature and do what is smart and differentiate between smart risk versus, you know, dumb risk. And that is the real value of an advisor. Vanguard has a study that they do every few years that shows that, you know, a measurable difference of how much return an advisor makes for investors by helping guide their decisions.
Libel, we're just about out of time, but can you tell us where we can get more information? I know you've got the wonderful yieldsforyou.com site, but there's another one.
So we got yieldsforyou.com is the main one you want to go to. We've got on there resources and we've got the classes, and those will link to the different sites that we have that I would recommend.
Thank you, Leibel. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. His website is simply LeibelOnFire.com. That's LeibelOnFire.com. I'm Freddie Bell, and more New Beginnings is straight ahead.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Thanks for hanging out with us this week on New Beginnings. And did you know that today is National Chef Day? It recognizes the dedication and hard work of personal chefs around the country. There's a difference between a personal chef and a private chef. A private chef usually works exclusively for one client and typically lives in a person's home or on the property. A personal chef may have many clients, run their own business, or work for a company. The services a personal chef provides may include preparing meals in the client's homes or delivering meals already prepared. They may also create a meal plan according to dietary needs or the client's preferences. Clients then follow instructions followed by the chef for heating the meals. And some personal chefs offer catering services as well. And since being a personal chef is a competitive business, experience and training is necessary. While not all personal chefs attend a culinary program, they do have years of experience and have honed their skills in that trade. And today is a celebration to personal chefs with the drive to keep growing their skills and their businesses. One day I'll be able to afford my own. And here today is words to the wise, that which I greatly believe has come to me. Today's words to the wise, that which I greatly believe has come to me. You can find more information about my words to the wise in the book entitled Words to the Wise, available right here at FreddieBell.com. As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
According to U.S. News and World Report, as of yesterday, and in recent years from the Guinness Book of World Records, this is a setup, so you'll know the answer. What is the best-selling book of all time, even today? The Bible. To give you a little context, that it might still have value for people, the report of the five top-selling books currently and over time. Number one, see if it surprises you, Don Quixote, 500 million copies. Number two, A Tale of Two Cities, 200 million copies. The Lord of the Rings, 150 million copies. The Little Prince, remember that beautiful story? I do. 142 million copies sold. Number five, we're finally getting to it, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, the best-selling of that entire series by Rowling. That issue, or that particular book, was 107 million. Her entire series of Harry Potter, at the moment, numbers 400 million in sales. Where does the Bible fall? Best estimates between 5 and 7 billion, copies distributed. Now I know some copies may be like my grandmother's Bible at home on my bookshelf, gathering dust. But with 5 to 7 billion copies, humanity still finds some value in the symbolic stories, histories, the teachings of the Gospels, and the imagination of the closing book of Revelation. But let's don't get too far. Let's start at the beginning. Spiritual creation. Now mind me, spiritual creation. Charles Fillmore, among others, was very clear that the opening story of the 7 days of creation was speaking about spiritual creation, forming the archetypes of what was possible to come into physical manifestation. It reminds me of that God characterization that George Burns gave us in Oh God, the movie. He said, I did the big stuff, the big picture. The little stuff is up to you. In other words, he created a spiritual framework of all possibility. We then work and create within that. That's why Charles Fillmore in our Unity teachings, his two Bible books, by the way, are Mysteries of Genesis, that creation, and Mysteries of John, that begins, in the beginning was the Word. We'll speak of that next week. So Charles in his career did not have time to write books on all the Bible. So what did he choose? The creation story of Genesis and the creation story of the power of the Word, the Logos, in the Gospel of John. Two different ways of understanding how we came into being, and not in the ancient days, but this morning, Sharon, how you awoke and God gave you a new day and the possibility to make choices of what you would do with that day. Charles was very fond, working in the beginning of the 20th century, with the latest thing on the scene. Just like we do today, we like to see what's the latest bestseller or new insight on life or any subject. He worked with a 1903, new at that time, book by Farrar Fenton, A Holy Bible, translated from, as he describes it, original Hebrew, Chaldee, and Greek languages. Chaldee was a reference to Aramaic, the language of Jesus. So that those are the sources that Fenton worked from. And let me just begin with Genesis 1, the short section that describes the first day of creation, and see if you can't hear what excited Charles Fillmore in this idea that this was creating the matrix, the archetype, the whole realm of possibilities from which all good has been unfolded over time, even in your own life this very morning. By periods, God created that which produced the solar system. Let me say that again. By periods, God created that which produced solar systems. Then, that which produced the earth. But the earth was unorganized and empty, and darkness covered its convulsed surface, while the breath of God rocked the surface of its water. Then God said, "Let there be light," and light came. And God gazed upon the beautiful light, and God divided the light from the darkness. And to the light God gave the name day, and to the darkness he gave the name night. This was the close and the dawn of the first age. That first day, let there be light. This is how we can all creatively approach each of our days. To make that declaration, just as the Spirit of all did, let there be light. Okay, where does the rubber meet the road? Perhaps you have a challenge in your life, financial affairs, relationships, career situations, anything, you name it. You can choose to work in the divine pattern and look at this situation that concerns you, even something within you, an uneasy heart, confused mind, and say, let there be light. In other words, acknowledging that all creation, all newness, begins with a declaration of light, of clarity, of consciousness, of awakening.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org. Well, that's our show for this week. Special thanks to Dr. Michael Osterholm, epidemiologist, for stopping by and telling us how we can protect ourselves against this new variant of COVID-19. Also, Leibel Sternbach, thank you for helping us to protect our money and Unity South Twin Cities, plus our great friends at EERP Minnesota. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for making us a part of your week. And for everyone who's been a part of this one, I'm Freddie Bell, saying that every day is a chance for a new beginning. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you next time. We'll